So, hello all together. Welcome for Computer Vision. So first of all, because also somebody asked me, in case you haven't seen the slide last week, and in case you do not have an appointment for your exam yet, so just one, or as a reminder, maybe. So the exam for this lecture will be an oral exam, which goes over 30 minutes. Christian Ries or me, we will be the examiners. And we have these five possible time slots. So in case you want to be early, even on July 23rd, the 1st, and then in September and in October. So please contact our secretary, Maria Barotti, and then you can get an appointment for the exam with her. Yeah, so here you find her phone number and her email address, or you can also come to her office and get a date. Or get an appointment. Okay, good. So, then let's go get to computer vision. What we will speak about today is structured light. And in fact, we will what we will look at today is how we can enhance the stereo vision techniques that we learned about, in particular last week and also the time before, that we take two cameras and look at a scene and try to compute disparity between the two images and derive depth from that. So we learned how that works, but we also learned about disadvantages of that method. And structured light now is an idea that we replace one camera by a projector. So we use a projector, project images, or project an image into our scene. And essentially that means we project patterns onto our objects and look at these patterns with a second camera, which is slightly offset from the projector. And because now we project a pattern, we can control that pattern, and we can enhance robustness and can achieve nice or can build a nice depth sensor from that. And we will see that essentially the geometry is exactly the same as it is for stereo vision. Because I can control the pattern, I have much more control and I can faster get depth images. So that's what we will look at today. And again, here are the references where some of the slides have been taken from. Back to the motivation. So what we did last week and essentially all the time before was what we call passive acquisition. Passive means that we just have two cameras that look into our scene. So they do not light the scene somehow or cast any patterns or something like that. It's really completely passive. And in order to get depth, we always use two cameras. Here we have a case, for instance, with two cameras, or any other ways where these two cameras are mounted, maybe here even on glasses. We need a step to calibrate these cameras. How are they positioned with respect to each other and all that stuff. You learned about that. And then we take two images or maybe even more images, rectify them, compute disparity. Disparity delivers depth. And as a result, we get a 3D reconstruction where for every single point, we also know a depth value. So essentially every pixel is a measured 3D point in our world. Okay, so that's what we did up to now. And you also learned about the problems of these approaches. In particular, we have a problem if we don't have texture details in the images. If we take two pictures of a white wall, on both pictures we see a white wall. And it's almost impossible, if there are no marks on the wall, it's impossible to find correspondences between the points. So in such cases, it will fail. if we have scenes like this with more structure and so on, it works pretty well. But even on the uniform parts here again, we will have the correspondence problem, and we learned last time how we can nevertheless find a reasonable solution in these areas, yeah, by mainly interpolating depth values or disparity values between more salient parts, yeah, where we see real features, and between them we can reconstruct then a reasonable depth. But essentially that's a guess. Okay, now active image acquisition, yeah, is what we will speak about today. And here active means that we also have a component that changes the scene, or at least the scene or how we see the scene. And usually that's something like a projector, and this projector now casts a pattern onto the objects. Yeah, so here's a typical example. We will see that in a minute where that comes from. So that's a pattern of stripes in different colors. And already as a human, I think it's pretty easy to understand that if we look at one of these blue, or for instance at this blue stripe here, yeah, which on the images of the projector is a horizontal line, but here on the 3D geometry, yeah, this line of course is no longer a line, but we can simply, or rather easily, reconstruct the 3D shape of that line just from that picture. Yeah, and doing that in an algorithm delivers us very nicely from this image. Yeah, we can very well reconstruct the 3D shape of that object. Yeah, even in regions where we don't have many features, like here, for instance. Yeah, but we can reconstruct well because that pattern now delivers the features we can look for. And here, this is a picture of a very popular project, the Michelangelo project. In 2000 or so, scientists from the United States made it possible to get access to that sculpture, David. Whenever in the evening, when the visitors were out of the museum, they were allowed to get there. And they've built this setup here where they could make a 3D scan of that sculpture. I think it took more than a year, and they scanned really in little pieces that sculpture and stitched all that together to a very high resolution 3D surface. This is not from here from David, but a very similar project. And here you can really see that it's possible with such a setup to get very, very fine details. You can even see the chisel marks very well and guess how that entire thing was made. Yeah, so that's really very, very detailed. And this is possible with such techniques here. Yeah, and it's usually more robust. And in that case, I mean that it's active is not a problem, as long as it's not very, very strong X-ray light or whatever, yeah, that could make damage to the statue, then it's fine. Okay, so passive image acquisition means just take two pictures and try to reconstruct a 3D surface from that. Active image acquisition means, there are two variants essentially. One is that we still take a stereo setup as before, but in order to generate correspondences, yeah, like on the white wall example, we add a projector, yeah, that casts a pattern or projects a pattern onto the object so that it's easier for us in our stereo setup to find correspondences. Yeah? So that's the simple way, or active image acquisition number one. And variant two now is that we use a projector to project an image and only one more camera. And because we know what image we project, yeah, we can solve the reconstruction problem with only one camera. So both of these approaches are valid, but today we will mainly speak about that one. Because it has the advantage that we only need one camera, and we will see that the geometry is essentially the same as we had before. So it's still triangulation. But the interesting question now is, yeah, how should these patterns look like that we project, and so forth. And this is what we will look into today. So here again, a few examples of such 3D scanning setup. So here again, this is a close-up of the Michelangelo project. Where you can see here the head of a scanner, which is essentially a laser that projects a line onto the object and a camera that films that. Yeah, so we will come back to that in a minute. And here is another setup to scan the faces or heads of persons. So that head here is rotated around the person, again, casting lines onto the image and filming that and reconstructing the 3D shape of that person, yeah, within a few seconds, yeah, while the head is rotating, or this setup is rotating around the head. Okay, and now these are examples here where we have a single line moving, yeah. So we will see that makes acquisition rather simple. Yeah, it's only a single line that moves over the object. And we film that and find the line in the image again and reconstruct 3D shape. That's what's also typically called laser scanning, yeah, because this line can be generated by a laser beam and a cylindrical lens, so that generates a laser shield that can then quickly be moved. Or more complex are structured light scanners, yeah, where not only a single line is generated, but a complete stripe pattern. So the advantage of such a stripe pattern is that, yeah, in the best case, from a single image, you can do the 3D reconstruction. So you need only one image, so it's faster. Or, yeah, you need a few images, yeah, so it's not interactive maybe, but still pretty fast. On the downside, of course, it's more complicated, yeah. In comparison, if we have only a single line, that's rather simple to detect in an image. But here now we have to do more processing, yeah, to really find all these lines again. We do not have enough colors usually on a projector so that we can give different colors to all these lines, so that just from the color we can identify in which line it is. Yeah, so we need more algorithms to reconstruct these stripe patterns. Yeah, and often structured light is a sort of compromise. So what you see here, this is again such a colored stripe pattern, but it's not only one image that we take, but this pattern moves a little bit, yeah, to get all the information to get high resolution. Yeah, so this is sort of in between a static, very fine stripe pattern like here, and a single stripe here that moves over the entire object. So we have a continuum of such methods.
Question?
Yes. Ah, okay. Okay, I mean, from an algorithmic point of view, one camera is enough. Yeah. So, you mean this difference here between image acquisition one and two? I would say that one is typically used when you do have a stereo setup. Yeah, that works nicely. But in some cases, it doesn't work anymore. Then you just take a projector and generate a pattern. Yeah, and now the two cameras see the pattern, yeah, and because now you have a pattern on a white wall, for instance, you can reconstruct that white wall, which you couldn't do otherwise, yeah? So you're sort of flexible. So in normal cases, yeah, you can use a passive image acquisition, and if you need it, if it doesn't work, then you can turn on a projector, and then it will work immediately. In most cases, when you buy a 3D scanner, that will be a setup like this here, yeah, that you only have one projector and one camera, and all the solutions we will see now are from this area. So this is the normal case. Yeah, does that answer your question? So yeah, or only sort of, because you asked in which cases. I cannot say for busts use this one and for whatever cars take this one. it is really that this is sort of in between these two, yeah. But I would say I'm of systems you can buy. For now, I can only remember such here. Okay. Good. So. Okay, and maybe yeah, as I already gave most of these arguments, but just to bring all that together again, yeah. So we have passive and active depth acquisition. The advantage of passive is that usually the data collection is easy. You just take two pictures. You can even buy, or for some time it was possible to buy cameras that simply had two lenses, and that were simply two cameras, yeah, in one case. So it's just taking a picture like with a normal camera. And yeah, no, a non-intrusive setup. Yeah. So for instance, if you want to acquire scans of faces with a projector, you have the problem that people should close their eyes so they don't look into the projector. Yeah. So with passive stereo, that's no problem at all. It can produce dense depth maps. We learned about that last week, but it may not work for featureless surfaces. Yeah, the typical uniform white wall example. Whereas for active methods are usually more robust because the pattern you generate, yeah, you can control the pattern. So you will generate a pattern that makes it easy for you to find correspondences. Yeah. So you can easily avoid all these problems from passive stereo. You can recover data even at featureless parts of the scene. There's a higher accuracy, but possibly sparser depth maps. Sparser depth maps in the sense that the pattern that you generate usually has a lower resolution or lower frequency than your image sensor. Yeah. Just for practical reasons. And so, whereas for normal stereo, you might get pixel-wise correspondences, here the resolution might be a little bit worse. But of course, that's a trade-off between projector resolution and resolution of the camera and so on. So that's not a fundamental difference. It's very popular in industrial setups. Yeah, we will also see examples for that. It has more complex hardware, because you need a projector, you need software that controls both the projector and your camera. So these two must sort of somehow be synchronized so that you always know what was visible or what was projected onto the object in the moment you took the picture, for instance. It is intrusive. Yeah. So I spoke about the example of face acquisition where people have to close their eyes. Another thing is that, of course, when you illuminate these objects, they change their appearance. So if in parallel with the depth, you also want to record the color of the objects, yeah, you will see mainly the pattern of the projector and not the real color of these objects. So to get that one, yeah, you must switch between white illumination, taking a picture, and then stripe illumination to get depth. But that's possible. And yeah, the range of depth is usually limited just because projectors usually are not strong enough. So that if you want to make a 3D scan, for instance, of a church, yeah, you would need a projector that is strong enough to illuminate the entire facade of that church. Yeah, and it's, I mean, probably there are projectors that can do that, but they are not cheap. You also have limitations from that. And also if in a sunny day like today, yeah, if you take a projector, go outside and project onto an object, you will realize that the projector will be too dark. You don't see that image of the projector anymore. Okay, good. So as I said, structured light and stereo, essentially from a geometrical point of view, are the same. And to show that, yeah, let's look again at what we did before with stereo. Yeah. So our setup was that we have two images, I and J. Yeah, we look onto an object, and we also rectified these images so that we can say, if I have a certain point here in our 3D world, yeah, I for that point that I see here on image I, I can look on the corresponding scan line in the other image, yeah, and on this scan line I'm looking for a window that looks very similar to that one or most similar to that one. And if I have these two corresponding points, I set up rays between or through these points, and where these rays intersect or get closest, yeah, I assume that this is my 3D point in the world. Yeah, so that's very simple. Yeah, and that's stereo triangulation, because here we have a triangle, yeah, that spans these rays. Okay, but the problem, yeah, finding these correspondences. Yeah, that's from an algorithmic point of view, that's not very simple, because we have to scan the entire scan line. We have to compare many, many windows to find the most similar ones. And of course, this correspondence problem is not always unique. Yeah, you saw examples last week that it might be that there is a rather similar looking region, but at another place, yeah, or maybe we don't have enough features, so, or we have too many features, yeah, so that it's just not clear where the correspondences exactly are. Yeah, so finding these two corresponding points can be problematic. If we have them, the rest is simple. Yeah, that's simple algebra. Okay, now in structured light, what we do is we take essentially the same setup like here, but we replace one of the cameras with a projector. Yeah? And with this projector now, we can generate an arbitrary image or project an arbitrary image into our scene. Yeah? So that means we can control that image set that we project onto here, and we can generate arbitrary patterns, yeah, and look for these patterns again in the other image. Yeah, so we can generate the patterns that we are looking for. And so we will generate patterns that are rather simple to recognize, that have nice features, like these stripes, for instance. Yeah, so we have full control about that. But otherwise, the geometry is exactly the same. So if we generate, for instance, that light, that yellow dot here, yeah, so let's say our image is completely black, we just generate a single colored yellow point, yeah, and project that onto the image here, on the object here in the image, we just have to look for that yellow spot and find that yellow spot. Yeah, so correspondence is much simpler in that case. And if we see that yellow spot, we can immediately do triangulation and find that the depth of that point. Yeah, but now you also see, yeah, if we only take a single yellow dot, then we only have one depth measurement, and of course we would like to do many more. Yeah, so we could also project a red dot and a green one and a purple one, yeah, and find these. So we have four, but in general we don't have enough colors, yeah, so that we can immediately say we cast 1,000,000 points with different colors and immediately find these colors here again. I mean, that would be great, yeah, that would be very fast. But that won't work, yeah. So we have to think a little bit more about that, how these patterns should look like. And yeah, so as I said before, yeah, the same principle of ray triangulation works for both. So in a passive setup, we say we have a particular point. Here we see that point at a particular position, and here we see it at a particular position, and from these two positions we get the depth. And in the active setup, yeah, it's essentially the same. It is just here we see that point at a particular position, and here we project onto this point, yeah, a given color through a given pixel. Yeah, but it's just the role of one camera, yeah, is replaced by this projector. And even if the direction of light is different, the geometry is the same. Yeah, we project the pattern and look for features of that pattern in the other image. And here, just we look for similar patterns in both images, but the geometry is exactly the same. Yeah, and in fact, if we have such a setup here, we have the same calibration problems, for instance, that we have for a two lens setup, yeah, because we exactly need to know where is the projector positioned with respect to the camera, what is the field of view of the projector, yeah, what's its principal point, for instance. Yeah, most projectors like this one have a sheared frustum, so the principal point is far from the middle. Yeah, so they typically have a frustum that looks like this. Yeah, and the principal point is somewhere here. Yeah, so we need a very good calibration, internal calibration for projectors and a calibration with a camera here. And again, I mean, we won't detail on the methods for that, but the geometry is the same, and there are methods to calibrate these two, or to calibrate such a setup here. Okay, good. Now let's assume, yeah, so we understood our setup, we have a calibration. Yeah, so we know for every pixel of our image the corresponding ray into the world, yeah, or how, where this rays or where this pixel is projected to. And now we can think about how can we build a 3D scanner from that. And as I said, a very simple approach would be that we iterate over the pixels here in our projector, turn every pixel on, and then find that illuminated pixel here in that image. Yeah, so ideally we go to a completely dark room. Yeah, and then we turn on one pixel, and this pixel then, yeah, results in a bright spot in our image. And knowing these two positions, yeah, the which pixel we have, this corresponds to a ray, and where we see it, this corresponds to another ray, and at the intersection of these two lines, there must be our 3D point. Yeah, so that would be a very simple setup that you can build immediately, yeah, with a simple projector and a camera. Of course, that will work, but it will be slow, yeah, because we have to iterate over 1 million pixels. And even with a projector with 60 hertz, yeah, 1 million over 60 is still quite a lot of time. Yeah, so that's not really practical. Okay, but it explains the principle pretty well. So what would be an alternative? And the simplest alternative is not to project a single pixel, but a complete line. Yeah. So let's say in our projector, yeah, we can generate lines, horizontal lines, that we then sweep through. Or in a simple or more simple setup, and where that's where exactly or where it comes from originally, we don't even need a projector then. We just need something that projects a line, yeah, and then sweep that through or over our scene. And essentially, yeah, such a projector that generates a single line can be built with a laser. Yeah, a laser is a single beam. But with a cylindrical lens, yeah, this beam can become a fan, yeah, and it's a real, yeah, or also a shield, yeah. So it's a plane that is projected into the scene. And now if we look at that simple example here, yeah, our scene is a small cube, a sphere or a half sphere, and a larger cube, and here is our laser generating that laser shield or that laser fan. And now, of course, it will sort of generate a silhouette image or a silhouette here on these objects. Yeah? And now we install a camera, which is slightly offset from the laser or looks at it from an angle. And this is what we will see. Yeah? And as a human, we can immediately make a guess, yeah, that looks like a cube, a sphere, and a larger cube. But it's, of course, it's only one measured line here. And in fact, now, of course, we take many of these pictures and sweep the laser over the scene. Yeah, so we move the laser over the scene. We got a lot of these images, and essentially each of these lines, as we will see, or every point in this line gives me one single depth measurement. Yeah, and now we don't have to iterate over all pixels, but we have to iterate over the lines here. Yeah, and this is already much, much faster. It's not interactive, but it's much faster. And such systems can be used in several scenarios. Of course, one advantage is such a laser is pretty cheap. Yeah, you don't need a real projector. It works, for instance, also on a conveyor belt, so that in fact we don't sweep the laser, yeah, but the laser shines onto a conveyor belt and objects underneath, yeah, or are just moved underneath, yeah. And in an industrial setup, such conveyor belts, of course, are very common. So we have a single laser sheet and a camera, and while the conveyor belt moves, it can reconstruct the 3D shape of the objects, yeah, on the conveyor belt. Okay, yeah, this again in large, how that setup looks like. Yeah, here I hope, yeah, I think you can here quickly recognize the idea. And then the laser has to be moved so that we get multiple image and can reconstruct the 3D shape. So here is again an image showing that. And sorry, I forgot to remove that one. Originally, that was a movie, but somehow that got lost. So the image doesn't tell us much than a single stripe. So the idea is that we have, or what this image shows, we have that curved surface. We have a light source, yeah, generating that pattern here. And we look at that with a camera from an angle, get that curved shape, and from that shape can reconstruct the 3D shape, or we reconstruct by projecting multiple of these stripes, yeah, and by this really scan the surface. That's also where the name scanning comes from, yeah, because we scan the surface in this example from left to right. That's not very fast, but it's very precise, yeah, because this laser here is really can be very thin, at least if it's a good laser and the lens is good, yeah. So it's really very, very thin. It's possible to identify these spots very precisely, maybe even at subpixel resolution, to find where's the brightest spot. And this is really the usually most precise way to reconstruct 3D surfaces. But also it takes some time, yeah, because we need a complete sweep over the entire surface. Okay, and now let's look at a few formulas. I mean, it's essentially we already did all the math, but in that case, it maybe looks a little bit different because in our setup now, yeah, we have that laser generating that fan, that light shield, and we have an object, yeah, and here we see the illuminated curve, and we have a camera, and in the camera we can quickly find that curve again and see it here, here on the image. I hope you can recognize this red curve here on the blue screen. And now what we need to know, of course, is the position of that plane here in the 3D world. Yeah, so essentially that means we need a calibration again between our camera and this laser here, this laser shield. We need the plane equation of that laser shield, ideally with respect to the camera. So this is how such a plane can be described. And this becomes maybe a little bit difficult if the laser can move, yeah, because that means we need to know the rotation of the laser so that we, for every moment in time, we exactly know the plane equation of that laser at that point in time. Yeah? For a conveyor belt, that's much simpler because, yeah, it's a linear movement and which we can rather easily measure. But if the laser is really sweeping, yeah, we need something that measures the angle, for instance, and so that we always need the current plane equation while a picture has been taken. Okay, and yeah, of course, now our problem is a little bit different because we don't have real correspondences. Yeah, we don't know exactly this point of our laser shield, yeah, is this point on our image, but we don't even need that, yeah, because what we can say now is, okay, we see the line here at some point in the image, so we generate the corresponding ray, and where this ray intersects this light plane, there must be a 3D point, yeah. So we don't have correspondences within these lines. Yeah? We don't exactly know where this point ends up here in the image, or we don't even need that. We just need to mark all pixels here, yeah, where the object or where we see an illuminated spot and the ray through that pixel where it intersects the light shield, here we have a measurement. Yeah? So that's rather convenient. Yeah, we don't need this one-to-one correspondence thing. We just need to find the bright spots here and can immediately generate 3D measured points from that. And, okay, this means, yeah, that if we know that light plane, for instance, yeah, and we have a point X prime, Y prime, just by intersecting that ray, we can very quickly derive or have a formula here that gives us the set coordinate of the corresponding point in 3D world. Okay, yeah, so that's a very good first approach. Yeah, we only project such a laser shield. That means we don't need a projector. Yeah, we can just buy one of these. Yeah, you can even buy them on Amazon or whatever. That's pretty cheap. And the problem is also still very simple. Yeah, now we only look for points in our image that obviously have been hit by the laser. Yeah, and from these, we can directly reconstruct their 3D position in the world. Okay. That's nice, and as I said, this is very often used in practice. Yeah, it's a good compromise in the sense of simple setup and speed of acquisition. Yeah, every image gives us a lot of measurements. It doesn't require a real projector, and usually it is not used in the way that the laser sweeps the scene, but that the objects are moved under the laser. So here is an example that I found. This is a system that is used to measure the profile of tires. And yeah, so here we have a laser shield that projects here onto the tire, and then the tire rotates. Yeah, and of course, from that, you can quickly reconstruct the 3D surface of the tire. Yeah, you don't need any calibration or stuff like that. Every picture gives you one silhouette line of that tire, and you can immediately see how deep the profile is and stuff like that. Yeah, so that's all variants of that simple technique. Here, again, the face and head scanner that I've shown you before that works with a very similar technique. Yeah, it generates such a fan. I think it's not a laser because that would be too dangerous for the eyes, but normal light. Yeah, and then a camera that is slightly offset, and then it rotates around the head, and so the line sweeps over the face. And by filming that, yeah, you can quickly reconstruct the 3D shape of the light. Yeah, here again, illustration of the principle that I think we saw quite often. In that case here, for such a face scanner, that took about or more than 10 seconds per scan, because this entire head had to move around the person. 10 seconds is still okay. Yeah, you can stay calm for 10 seconds and maybe stop breathing. Much longer would be less practical. Okay, here another example of a device. I mean, that's rather old, but nevertheless, it was being sold by Minolta. Yeah, a very similar device that could take pictures, also in that example of faces. And here you can see that it's a depth image. It has depth associated with each pixel. Yeah, and so was able to reconstruct 3D views of a scene. Okay, good. Yeah, so that's the simple way to do it. But while it is possible to reconstruct in that example, for instance, a face, of course, that method would immediately fail if the face was moving. Yeah. If the person was talking or speaking or something like that, yeah, just because the system is too slow. And in fact, the major source of imprecision here is that, yeah, the person is still moving in between the single pictures. Yeah, so that's all a problem because the method is still too slow. Yeah, or for several purposes, still too slow. Yeah. Recording active people, speaking people, or stuff like that. So, yeah, we could think about, yeah, why not use multiple stripes? Yeah, so for instance, here we could say, okay, we do not take one stripe, but we take three, for instance. Yeah, and then in the image, I see, okay, there's stripe one, stripe two, stripe three. So for three, that still might work. Maybe in some cases, for instance, for the nose, we will run into trouble if the line suddenly disappears and then comes again. Yeah, so we have to really identify these three different lines. So we might say, okay, let's cast a red line, a blue line, and a green line. So we can use color to differentiate. Yeah, but also we don't have that many colors, yeah, that we can do that very often. So we can increase the number of stripes. But at some points, yeah, it is difficult because now we still have to find corresponding lines. Yeah, we have to see this is the line I projected here in column whatever 35. Now is this exact silhouette line or this line on my object? Oops. Good. So how can we handle that? And of course, in the very beginning, yeah, you saw these stripe patterns, so these colorful stripe patterns. So obviously, it does work somehow. But we have to think more about that. And one very simple and elegant idea is the following: because it is so difficult to identify particular lines, yeah. An alternative is the following. We cast multiple different patterns onto our object. And when we had the demo here 3 weeks ago or so, probably you saw that with a David scanner, the structured light scanner. Yeah. So the first pattern, or it looked like patterns, stripes are projected that are first rather thick and then become smaller and smaller again. Yeah, I hope you saw that or you remember that. And essentially, algorithmically, the idea is as follows. The first pattern that we project is this here. So this is completely white on the left and black on the right. So we project that pattern. Yeah, and take a picture. So information-wise, essentially, yeah, we could look for that line, and this gives us a single line measurement. So yeah, we haven't gained much. Yeah. Okay. So in the second what we project is this stripe pattern. So now the stripes have only half the width. Yeah, and again we take a picture from that. And then we again half the width and so forth. So if we have whatever, let's say 1024 pixels width, yeah, that means we have 10 images. Or probably only 9, yeah, because here the width is 512. And we can go down until we have stripes that are only 1 pixel wide. Okay, so how does that help us algorithmically? Yeah, the idea now is that for every point here on our object, yeah, we remember whether this point was lit or unlit in one of these images. Yeah, so for instance, if we know here it was lit, then obviously it's from here, from the left half of our image. Yeah, and if in the second frame it was unlit, yeah, then we know it must have been from this stripe here. Yeah, because it would have been this stripe, then it would also have been unlit in that image. And if in the third image, then we see it is lit again, then we know we must be in this stripe. Yeah, because only in this stripe, here it's lit, here it's unlit, and here it's lit again. So essentially, yeah, in this binary decision, yeah, on this binary observation, yeah, we can quickly code single stripes that become very fine. And if we have an image that has a width of 1,000, yeah, with 9 images, or with 10 images probably, we can immediately find out for a particular pixel in which stripe it is. Yeah, so the index of the stripe is, so to say, encoded in the on-off pattern over the sequence of the images. Yeah, so in that example, yeah, we have 3 images, and essentially we can identify the 8 different stripes. Yeah, and of course this comes from 2^3. Yeah, that's 8. And yeah, as I said, yeah, 512 stripes we could then identify with 9 images. 9 images is not much. Yeah, if we have a 100 hertz camera, that's 1/10 of a second. Okay, here again is a try to illustrate that. Yeah, so if we take these patterns, yeah, and show them or stack them on top of each other, and we look at a particular point on our object, yeah, in that example we see, okay, in the first image it is lit, unlit, unlit, lit, and if we code that as 1001, we immediately get the number or the index of the stripe here, yeah. So algorithmically, that's very simple. Yeah, we look at a particular pixel of our image. Yeah, for every image we make a decision, lit or unlit. We do that for 10 images, so we get such a unique identifier that tells us the stripe. And essentially, if we know that stripe or that index, we know its X position on the projector, yeah? So we know the corresponding, yeah, like what we had before, laser shield, yeah? So we know the corresponding plane equation. And from that, we can immediately derive Z. Yeah? So that's very simple. Algorithmically rather simple, so it can be done in real time. Yeah, we don't need any correspondence finding stuff or so. Yeah, we just have to look at this pattern or find that pattern. And of course, now we have practical problems. It's not always clear whether a point is lit or unlit. Of course, in the camera image, it can be that you are on the border between lit and unlit. Yeah, then this decision is sort of vague somehow. We cannot be sure for every pixel that we really did that identification correctly. But nevertheless, yeah, it's much more robust than we have if we have single stripes and try to sort of sequentially follow them. Okay, here again, yeah, how this looks like. So maybe you can remember that from the demo that we had. That's a that's a pattern that is can be used there. Okay, good. Now that's one possible way. It still has the disadvantage that we need multiple images, something like 10 or 12 probably is the upper bound, but that's still for interactive things that's still too much. In particular, if objects move here in between, then this entire counting thing is confused, of course. So it is still sort of work in progress, or it still makes sense to try to generate more complicated patterns, like this here. And here we can see examples of a hand under this. Under such an illumination here, and that it is still it's possible to reconstruct the 3D shape from that, but now, of course, that's more complicated. Of course, color is used to better identify single regions, but to find out, when we see, okay, here it's blue, but it could be that blue stripe or that blue stripe or that blue stripe. Yeah, there are multiple blue stripes. So now we again have to go back to this correspondence thing. Yeah, and we will have to look at a neighborhood and see, okay, next to the blue stripe, there's a red one and then a green one. And on the other side, there's an orange one. Yeah, and so after some time, I find out, okay, this color combination only appears here again. Yeah, and essentially that's correspondence finding. Yeah, it is just that the patterns are much better to clearly identify correspondences, and that's why we usually such vertical stripes are used, because this is exactly the case where, if we have a horizontal baseline or only horizontal disparities, where we best can identify correspondences. And now we have to look for correspondences, which is different from what we had in stereo. We have to look for correspondences between the projected image and the seen image. Yeah, we only have one image that we see, but we also have the image that we project. And now we have to find the correspondences between the two. And here now it's particularly important that, of course, the brightness values and also the color values will be different. Yeah, because it's, I mean, if I project an image even on a white wall and I take a picture of it, the picture will be rather different in terms of color and brightness values from the image being projected. Yeah. So here we have to look at all these correlation stuff and so on I was speaking about, that we only look for correlation and not for a sum of squared differences, for instance, would be a bad idea, because brightness and color values will never be the same. Okay, good. Yeah, so now we get into a range, where we can really get all the information to reconstruct a surface with one single image. But on the downside, we now need again more complicated or complex algorithms, and need good hardware and good algorithms to do that in real time. Yeah, now the computation again becomes the bottleneck. Okay, so we could say essentially, for these triangulation methods, we have a continuum. Yeah, we have slow and robust methods, like this single stripe David scanner, for instance, here. Yeah. So this is pretty slow, but also very robust. Yeah, it's really difficult not to find that line in an image. Yeah. It's under controlled conditions and the laser is very bright. Yeah. So essentially, you will see white pixels and black pixels. Yeah, and every white pixel is one from is a hit. so to say, yeah, and gives you a depth measurement. Then we have these single frame methods, yeah, that I showed in the end. So here we need more complicated patterns, yeah, so that we have more information, and these complicated patterns make it more difficult, yeah, to find correspondences. Yeah, so that's very simple. And maybe in between we have these multi-stripe things like this binary coded pattern you remember. Yeah, that's we have multiple frames, but on the positive side we also need less computation and are more robust. So we are sort of in between. Another thing that we ignored up to now is that also with structured light, or with structured light, we usually assume, or ideally, we have objects that have uniform color, yeah, that are white. Yeah, black is difficult because then no light is reflected and we don't see the pattern. So ideally, something white like a wall or plaster or something like that, and if this is not the case, we can run into problems. So this is an example of an object which is reconstructed, and here it's completely white. That comes from a simulation. So if it's completely white, yeah, and we make such a structured light approach, we get this 3D model. But now in that case, yeah, it is blue and it has these red spots on it. Probably you cannot see it, yeah, but it has such a red texture on it. And you can immediately see that the quality of the measurement, of course, decreases. Yeah, because yeah, this interferes. The texture and the structured light pattern that is projected, yeah, they mix, essentially they multiply, and yeah, as a result, their imprecisions appear and the result or the quality of the result goes down. Okay, good. So that's standard structured light as it has been used for quite a few years, and probably you know that in the last years this problem of 3D scanning or 3D environment acquisition gained popularity. There are first mobile phones available. The iPhone X, for instance, has a real depth sensor on it. It has such a structured light sensor built into the mobile phone, yeah, which is really surprising because it needs something like a projector and a camera and lots of computation. Yeah, you learned about all that. And essentially the start for that was this sensor here. This is a most of you, I think, know it. It's a special device for the Xbox, for a gaming console. And this is a structured light scanner. Yeah, it uses all the principles that we've learned up to now. Maybe you haven't realized, if you saw it, that it's a structured light scanner because you see no light. And the reason for that is that it's a structured infrared light scanner. Yeah, so it does all that structured light things that we saw, but with infrared light, which humans don't see. Yeah? If you could see infrared light, we will see pictures, then you would realize that your living room looks very strange if you turn on the Kinect. Yeah? It's the purpose of the Kinect is to control a computer game. So in the depth image that is generated, it can identify persons and their pose, their position, yeah? And it can do that much more reliably than in a normal RGB video, yeah? Of course, as a human, you are also able to recognize a person and what it does, whether it raises the arm or so. But a computer can do that much better in a depth image that is generated from such a sensor here. And you see everything that we saw that we need sort of. There is one, I think that is, let me see. So that one is a normal RGB camera because it also films your living room, yeah, whether you want or not. This here is an infrared projector, And this is an infrared camera. Yeah, and essentially these two are such a structured light scanner. And yeah, it also has microphones to record audio with multiple directions and so on, but that's not so interesting for us now. And now the pattern that it generates, yeah, looks again different. So here we see such an infrared image that is taken here. And if you look at it closer, you see that it has many little dots here. Yeah, so what this projector generates, it's not a real projector in the sense that it can generate arbitrary images. It's a projector that always generates a static dot pattern. Yeah, and you can see that dot pattern here. It's a few 10,000 of these dots. And of course, yeah, also with this, you can do structured light, yeah. But now again, it is sort of impossible if we see a particular dot to identify which dot this is. Yeah, you again have to look at a neighborhood, yeah, to identify. Okay, this is dot whatever 11,412, and to identify the neighborhood to which this dot belongs to. Yeah, we again have to do a search. Yeah, and again have to find correspondences. The special thing, or the patent on this depth sensor, is on the pattern here, which is chosen in such a way that the window that is needed to find correspondences can be chosen rather small. Yeah, so the dots are not random. They have a very specific pattern, so that by just looking at a rather small neighborhood, you can quickly identify which part of the original image this is. Yeah, and so again, this is sort of a compromise or an optimization. This computation, finding correspondences here, can be done very quickly. It runs even on the Kinect on embedded hardware. So as a result, the Kinect directly delivers depth images as a result, yeah, without further computation of the game console. And here we see a result, yeah, and from the result you can see that the quality is not very good. Yeah, so this is far away from what would be needed for David, for this David scanner, for instance, or so. Yeah, but nevertheless, you can still recognize, we probably can recognize a hand here. And in this such a depth image, you can well recognize people and what is their current pose. Yeah, but there are lots of artifacts. Yeah, so for instance, there are large regions where no correspondences could be found, usually because for instance, the surface is black, so there's no reflection. Yeah, if you don't see a reflected pattern, you cannot reconstruct anything. Also, along silhouettes, there are no measurements because these are the regions that are seen by the camera but not reached by the pattern. Yeah, just because they are offset a little bit. Yeah, so along silhouettes, we have regions where we don't see anything. And in fact, yeah, I said I'm not sure. I think it's 20,000 little dots that are projected. Essentially, over the entire image, yeah, we only make 20,000 measurements, yeah, because we only measure at these dots, yeah, and everything in between just comes from interpolation here, yeah. So most of the values here are guessed, and only at relatively few points we have real measurements, yeah. But for the purpose, what it is made for, it does a very good job. And okay, here we can see I can see, but I'm afraid you cannot see. So if you download the slides and go back and forth, what you will realize is that so this is a film or a picture taken from this dot pattern, and here we see a little table. Maybe you can recognize that it's dark, and we see this dot pattern that looks like a starry sky. And now we put a book here onto it, and if you go back and forth on your slides, if you download them, what you will realize is that by putting the book there, the pattern moves a little bit. Yeah, just because the set value now changes, this parity changes, yeah, and so the pattern moves a little bit to the right. And yeah, this is exactly kind of the explanation what we did the last two lectures. Yeah, this moving pattern, this sidewards movement, directly corresponds to depth. Yeah, and here we can visualize that very pretty well with a real world example. Okay, so this is active or structured light scanning or active scanning in its traditional form. Just to be complete, there is a completely different technique that also is pretty popular. And in fact, the Kinect 1, which is the second Kinect, yeah, but comes with the Xbox One. Yeah, but this is Kinect version 2. This uses a completely different technique. This is a so-called time-of-flight camera. And time-of-flight here now means that the distance to a point in the scene is measured by measuring the time that the light needs from the sensor here until it is reflected and then arrives back at the sensor. So in these sensors, there's an infrared light in here, yeah, that emits very short impulses of infrared light into the scene. And then on a per pixel basis, there's an image sensor that measures the time from the moment the light left, sort of, until it arrives back at the sensor. And of course, I think you can imagine, yeah, light is pretty fast. So these are very, very, very short times, yeah? And it's technically quite involved to do that, to measure these time. And of course, it's made in a more complicated way than from my description, but it is doable. And with newest technology, it's doable in a way so that such time of flight sensors, yeah, are also cheap enough to be used for such gaming consoles. The advantage of that is that you really get a single measurement per pixel. Yeah, you don't need this correspondence stuff and so on. But on the other hand, it's technically really very involved to do that. So there are many sensors now, also even in the iPhone, and small Kinect-like sensors. Built-in laptops and stuff like that, and most of them don't use this time of flight here. Yeah, that was a kind of experiment to try to establish that in entertainment, but most sensors that are available today are using the structured light technique. And in fact, the quality of these sensors was not much superior to that one. Yeah, to the old Kinect, but yeah, this is mainly to be complete. This one. Okay, good. So that brings me to the end of the lecture today. I'm a little bit early, but I think the weather is good enough so that you will survive that. We only have one lecture left next week. And next week, what we will speak about is, up to now, we only take single depth images. We take a single image of our scene, and for every pixel, we get a particular depth. But what we want to have in the end usually is a real 3D representation of the object we are looking at. And for this, we do not only need a single picture or a single frame of such a depth image, but we need multiple. Yeah. So we want to take multiple depth images of a particular object and then merge these measurements to a real 3D description of our object. So we want to have real 3D surface reconstruction, and there are also very interesting algorithms for that, and this is what we will look at then finally next week. So in the end, that we have a real complete pipeline, yeah, starting with two cameras, for instance, yeah, until the end when we get a real 3D model, including 3D coordinates out of our system. Okay, that will be next week. Of course, I'm still open for questions. And if this is not the case, then see you next week again. Thank you.